Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, December 6, 2016. With me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm fine. Staying warm. It's brisk out there.
Yes, well, winter is here.
It was 16 degrees when I got up.
And that's not Kelvin.
No, nor Celsius.
Just making sure, because it's you, John. Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I'm well. It's great to have you back and great to be on the other side of the desk once again.
You know, it's really great to be back. And I love all of the great experiences that I've been able to have with listeners and readers over the past month. But it's really nice to be back and to get to sit down on this side of the microphone. And thank you so much for filling in for me while I was gone.
My pleasure, man. It actually was a lot of fun. And
I know.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some people that would be surprised to hear me say, even though this is a daily show, it's fun every single day. But it is. So thank you.
My pleasure.
All right. So, hey, as long as we're here, let's hop into Amazon. And what I want to look at here is the news that Amazon is opening a store. Now, we know they've already done the one store, the bookstore. Now they're doing a regular, I'll call it a store, where you buy more than just books, sort of like grocery store sort of thing. So they're making a new store, and it's going to open in Seattle in, I believe, early 2017. And when you go into the store, you get what you want, and then you leave. There's no lines, there's no cashiers. You just get what you need and you leave the store, and everything gets charged back to your Amazon account. And the idea to me sounds really cool. The implementation, I'm really interested to see how that plays out. And I'm also curious what people that already have jobs like in grocery stores think about stuff like this, because I'm betting there's some people that are feeling like their jobs are threatened by this.
Well, like toll booth operators with the Easy Pass or whatever it's called in your various states.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, this is from that standpoint, I know this is going to sound insensitive, but I feel like we have to let progress happen. And then that will hopefully, but not always, create different opportunities that people that were displaced from the thing that technology is now taking over can go and do these other things. But we've got to get past this. And especially with the shopping in a brick and mortar store model, we'll set aside for the moment the fact that Amazon, it was basically the company that led us, you know, out of the brick and mortar and into the brave new world of shopping online. But and now they're going back into brick and mortar, but they're doing
it with a twist.
With a twist, right? But what they're doing is solving a pain point, and that, you know, that's why I relate it to the toll booth operators and that whole system, because it solves a pain point for the customer. Waiting in line to give people money is ridiculous. I've always said that there's two things, two keys to being successful in business. Number one is understand that every business, no matter what business you think you're in the customer service business. And number two, which is really just like 1A, is make it easy for your customers to give you their money. If you make that difficult, you're taking the easiest part of the process making it the turning point, the turnaround point, right?
I was in a Barnes & Noble one Christmas years ago shopping, and my wife and I had wandered through the store at Christmas and picked out about $150 worth of books. And we got to the checkout. It looked like it was a 30-minute wait. The line was terrible. And what we did was we went and we put those books back on the shelves, and we walked out of the store.
That's it. You had already been sold. And that's the worst thing, right? They already did all the work to convince you to trade your hard-earned sawbucks for books. One piece of paper for another. But it's exactly what they wanted. And then they turned you away. Mm-hmm. And it's awful. So, yeah, this Amazon thing, I actually really like the concept. You walk in and scan your, I guess it's a QR code, or you scan something from your...
It's a QR code on your phone.
From the Amazon app, or the Amazon Go app, I should say. Right? And then you just go put stuff in your bag and you walk out the store. I assume when you walk out, it scans and tracks you and knows that you've done this. And that's great. Yep. That's better than what Apple does.
The interesting part about it is that now Amazon knows every little thing I buy to eat instead of Kroger.
Well, they know more than that. They know what you picked up off the shelf and put back.
Oh.
Mm. Oh, because maybe it didn't look so savory.
Yeah.
Right.
Read the ingredients. You didn't like this. What you picked one thing up. You saw that something else was cheaper.
It had high fructose corn syrup in it. Back on the shelf.
Back on the shelf. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is great. I mean, Apple has a similar thing, right, where you can go into an Apple store and check out with your phone by taking a photo of the thing, and it'll charge your Apple Pay or whatever that works out to be, right?
Yeah, that's kind of how it works. I use it all the time.
Oh, it's great because it saves you from the pain of having to wait in line. You're checking yourself out. Amazon takes it a whole nother step, and nobody's checking you out. It's great, I think.
Yeah, I like the way Amazon is showing this or presenting this, because with Apple, I go into the store, I find the product that I want, and now I go through the process of scanning the barcode on the app and verifying that I want to purchase the individual item. If I'm buying three things, like let's say you need to buy three dongles for your new computer.
Okay, sure.
That's three different scans. So it's three different transactions.
Right.
With Amazon, you go in and you scan your QR code for your account when you go in, and that's it. You're now done. So you can buy as much as you want, put back as much as you want, and it doesn't matter until you walk out of the store, and now it triggers the transaction, and you pay for everything all at once, and you get a little notice on your phone that says, hey, here's how much you just spent. And you're on your way, which is cool, but at the same time, it's also scary because it's a lot easier to not pay attention to how much you're spending if you don't have to actually look at anything until after you've left the store.
Oh, that's true. We don't. Yeah, that's right. You're not seeing a grand sum total, although maybe the app would show you a grand sum total or even a running total. Do we know what sort of granularity we get on that?
Not yet. The video demo that they showed, it implies that you can see a running total of what you're purchasing, but it doesn't make it clear that you're really seeing a running total as opposed to a shopping list that you're accumulating as you go, or if you even really see that.
You know, I can think of one downside of this, but there are probably several, but the one that occurs to me is specialty stores like Whole Foods. There are stores that cater to people who are particularly health conscious, and they don't even bother to carry things that are bad for you. When you have a highly computerized system and people are buying the popular items like, you know, potato chips and snack foods and instant foods and frozen foods, there will be a tendency for the Amazon's computer to brilliantly figure out that they're going to make more money by selling people things that they have been manipulated into buying that may be bad for them. And so stores that counter that, like Whole Foods and Sprouts in Colorado, I don't know where else they are going to have to scurry to try to catch up with this effect if they're going to continue to be an outlet for local farmers and producers of healthy foods.
So what you're saying is Amazon is going to spur better competition in the grocery market.
If they can afford it, if they can match Amazon's computer expertise and implementation,
I think Whole Foods can afford it, John.
I think Whole Foods can afford it.
Well, they were one of the first to do Apple Pay, so I'm optimistic.
Yeah,
I'm optimistic too. And and Dave, I'm with you. I'm actually kind of excited about this, and I wish that Amazon wasn't doing this just in Seattle, because I would love to get to walk into an Amazon store and just test all of this stuff out, buy some groceries and leave and see how the whole thing works.
Well, their plan, as I saw, was to do, like, wasn't it like 2,000 stores or something?
Yes, but they're starting with the one in Seattle.
Sure, of course. Yeah. Well, you gotta float your test balloon.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And it takes a while for stuff like this to get to Colorado. So I guess what I'm really saying is that I'm experiencing a little bit of envy for the people that live in markets that get these sort of things first.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Hey.
Cool stuff.
Yeah, very cool. And I'm looking forward to trying it out. But there's something else I want to talk about before we wrap up. And I thought today would be the perfect day for this conversation because Brian's not here to defend himself. John, I'm looking at you, John. Brian, he wrote a piece yesterday where he talks about, to distill it down, how our iPhone could become our primary or our sole computing device, and that when we... when we're out and about, it's just an iPhone. But when we come home, it's sort of like the old Duodoc days where you plug your iPhone in. In those days, it's plug your Mac in, and now it becomes like a desktop Mac. But in this case, it would be your iPhone plugs into something else, and now at home it becomes another thing for you. But really, your iPhone is your only computing device.
Let me quote from the Jean-Louis Gasset article. A couple of friends of mine, unknown to each other, posited a scenario in which we carry our smartphone around with us, and when we reach our office or home desk, plunk it down next to a large screen and a keyboard trackpad combo. The mobile device connects wirelessly, and presto, the comforts of desktop computing. Surely, they both said, this is just a matter of software and time. Well, my reaction to this is probably predictable. But I was thinking that I would like to see a twist on this. I think the iPhone has evolved to be a fabulous mobile device, and it certainly could be better utilized at home. And so rather than having it be your only device, I'd like to see it intelligently integrated into your office or your home system. And my twist on this is that when you get back to your office or home, you plunk down the iPhone, just as it says in the article, and all of a sudden you have a giant touchscreen like a Microsoft Surface Studio, where your phone now is displayed on a much larger touchscreen. And that's not your only computational device. You have other computational devices, servers and storage and much more powerful desktop systems, and you seamlessly transition between the integration of the overarching system as a whole and the iPhone, which plugs into this system and integrates with it and seamlessly synchronizes and is displayed, but is not your only device. That's my twist on the whole thing. What do you think?
You know, I've had this idea about what our computing devices would ultimately be, and this is an idea I've had for several years, and it's that we have windows into our digital world, and depending on which device we have, that gives us a bigger or smaller view into our digital world. So if I'm walking around with my iPhone, I still have access to everything that I would at my desk, and I can still work with all the same data. It's just all there. It's just that I have a smaller window, so the way that I'm going to interact with that data is a little bit different than when I'm sitting at my desk and I have a much bigger window to look into all of my data.
So the partitioning and allocation of tasks is the key to security as well. Sandboxing and isolation of tasks. If you want to be able to have access to everything from your phone when you're on travel, that means that somebody hacks into your phone. They have access to everything in your universe as well, not just what's on the phone.
I have, yes, John, and you're right. There's no question about that. But you're also mostly alone. You're not actually alone. There's good people in that group with you, but you're a significantly small, insignificant minority, I think.
You're an outlier, John.
Yeah, because I don't think
just
most people an outlier. I don't think most people care that much about it. And as I always say, when asked to balance convenience versus privacy and security. I think most people are going to choose convenience in this particular
scenario.
Well, scenario. but so if we take that though, and we grab Jeff's idea that all our data is in the cloud, or and not just our data, but our processing is in the cloud. And as an aside, I think this is where Apple's really screwing up, because they're keeping our data in the cloud, but keeping a lot of processing local, which is really, frankly, just stupid. But if we have all the processing happening in the cloud, then these windows into our data, and that cloud could be a private cloud. I'm not, you know, I do a lot of private cloud stuff.
I like how you're thinking, Dave.
Right. But, you know, whatever the cloud is, and it could be managed by somebody like Apple or Google, or Dropbox is sort of a limited use cloud, but you get the point, or it could be on your Synology or some other server that you have at your home or your business. But whatever that cloud is that stores all of your stuff, and not only does it store your data, but it stores the engines that you use to manipulate that data. Now
you start to draw an architectural diagram.
Yeah,
you can,
but the
have
problem,
the cloud, and then your home server Synology like system connected right to the cloud is local, and then you have various windows into the home server and the cloud based on
there's
permissions.
There's a problem,
and security.
Though. I got a problem, yeah. John. The problem is bandwidth. Right now, today's problem is bandwidth. We don't have ubiquitous, high enough speed. So reliability and speed are the things that need to happen to bandwidth. And we don't have that enough right now to truly manage all of our stuff in the cloud, right? We need some, when I say local, I mean hyperlocal. Like we need data to live on the device that we're using at some level. And so I think in the short term, maybe for the next 10 years, maybe 15, we've got to live with this thing that Jean-Louis Gasset sort of points out, which is the, you know, one device that we can dock when we need to dock it and not dock, you know, when we don't want to dock it, that is that local cache of our data and engines, right? We're talking about both of these things. But as soon as we fix this bandwidth thing and just, you know, have us all radiated all the time, and we have bandwidth everywhere, then we can sort of do away with the concept of the engines living locally, and just have the device or the window that we're using. And then we can actually go back to multiple devices again. But I think we need... I think this will happen where we have the one device that sort of docks, and because I don't think the bandwidth problem will be solved soon enough, but it will eventually. And then it'll be a whole different experience, because you'll have your, I always go back to Ender's Game on this stuff and Jane, right, which is the sort of the omniscient, ever present avatar or personal assistant, if you will, mm-hmm. that helps Ender out wherever it is and whenever it is he happens to be. And the interface with Jane is always just whatever works out best at the time. And
yeah, it's whatever interface is the right interface in that moment.
Yeah. And so I think we will get there. But again, the engine and the data has to live in the cloud for that to truly work. And we need the ubiquitous bandwidth in order for that to happen.
So you're saying that there's going to be some architectural pain points mm-hmm. as we move forward and evolve. And in the near term, it's going to look like a bad idea in some respects until the system evolves into its glorious end state.
Well, not so much a bad idea, just an idea that's
it'll
not
look
ready.
Like a bad idea.
It'll look like a bad idea. Yeah,
because
right.
Apple's not going to have. We know Apple's not going to have a briefing where Tim Cook's going to come out on stage and say, "Here's the plan for 2017. Here's how we evolve into 2019. Here's how battery life and network communication speeds are going to solve a key point, and here's how it will morph into this glorious final state in 2020. Here's our roadmap." We know that's not going to happen.
No, they have that. They have that exact conversation, but it's just not one that they
just not with us
on stage.
Not with
us. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I and so because of that, because we don't have that ubiquitous bandwidth problem truly solved yet, we still need our devices to hold data for us and process that data for us in at least limited ways, and sometimes even far more than limited ways. So we will, I think this concept of the single device that docks may still come to fruition because we won't have this cloud panacea soon enough.
All right. So because of mobility, there's certain design constraints on the iPhone in its processing power and the battery that can supply that. So what I'd like to see is when you plug your iPhone into that dock and you have your glorious big 30-inch touchscreen, that the touchscreen has the processing power to take over the load because it's plugged into AC power and can access your phone as if it were the phone, except that it's accessing all the memory and storage and function of your phone, except that it's not using the minuscule but powerful 64-bit, you know, mobile processor in the phone, sort of offload the machine engine.
Right. In the end, it doesn't matter. The end game doesn't matter because none of the processing will happen locally, and then we'll all be better off.
Right. So what it really comes down to is we're in an interim phase with our technology, which is nothing different because we're always in an interim phase with our technology.
Yep. Yeah. For sure.
All right. Hey, we're out of time, so we have to wrap up. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, fun discussion. My pleasure.
Yeah. And listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad I'm back to get to chat with you again. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.